Hi, everybody. Nina Gilbert here, your friendly music director. Tim is taking another of his vacation days, and he's invited me and the choir to lead us into Advent with some Christmas carols. You can hear 28 carols. That's more than our usual service of lessons and carols, jigsawed together in audio file 2. Over here in audio 3, I'd like to share some thoughts and discoveries about Christmas carols. I love learning the origin of things that I use, whether they're recipe ingredients or musical elements. And my favorite theory about the origin of song comes from the brilliant psychologist Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. Describing the development of sense and communication, Professor Csikszentmihalyi, who goes by Mike, thinks back to the amoebas, whose only sense and only way of relating to the world outside their own membranes is touch. Eventually, creatures developed smell, taste, sight, and hearing. But according to Professor Mike, what really separates us from the amoebas is the ability to hand down our histories and legends through song. We think of music, and for that matter words, as existing forever, not necessarily getting created and not existing before that. But I like to imagine the moment of transition, from the time when a particular piece of music doesn't exist yet to when it does. Imagine freezing along with the audience in Vienna on December 22nd, 1808, for example, and being the first audience to hear an orchestra go da-da-da-dum. Imagine a world that hasn't heard that before. But let's get to Christmas carols. Where did they come from? It depends on what carols you're thinking of. I'll touch a few categories, and then I promise to get to a few famous carols. Most of the hymn carols we sing in church these days are from the 18th and 19th centuries, some from the 20th. Our choir has sung some 15th century medieval English carols. The best known may be Noel, Sing We Both All and Some. And I know that a few years ago we sang What Tidings Bringest Thou Messenger. Those are originally dance choruses. Soloists sang the storylines in the verses, and the refrains were dance processions. But music has always been part of celebrating, or shall we say, partying? Back when Christmas celebrations were evolving from pagan Saturnalia, people would sing and dance and drink, not necessarily in that order, around a nativity scene. The Bishop of Rome told people they should go to church and sing Gloria in Excelsis Deo instead. 1,000 years later, however, St. Francis of Assisi encouraged carol singing. So did Martin Luther. 1640, the Puritans banned Christmas altogether, basically because it was too much fun, which of course meant people found ways to sing in secret. By the turn of the 18th century, Christmas caroling became a class thing. Poor people would parade through wealthy neighborhoods, singing, banging on pots and pans, and demanding food, drink, and money. Think of the figgy pudding sequence in We Wish You a Merry Christmas. We won't go until we've got some. Fast forward 100 years. Rowdy songs get new words appropriate to sing in churches and homes. The original words to deck the halls, for example, were a Welsh song of love, actually more lust than love, nothing in common with the carol we know except for the fa-la-las. Mixing, matching, and adapting words with pre-existing melodies is a brilliant way to shape a tradition. Which brings us to Charles Wesley. Brother of John, founder of the Methodist Church, and a super prolific hymn writer, his 6,500 hymns include about a dozen in our hymnal, mostly pretty well known, on the order of Come Thou Long Expected Jesus and Jesus Christ Is Risen Today. One Christmas morning in the 1730s, Charles is so moved by the sound of church bells filling the sky that he writes a hymn about it. This is not that unusual for him. If he wrote 6,500 hymns, that averages out to one every 3 or 4 days throughout his productive years. He calls this one Hymn for Christmas Day. We need to know the word welkin, which apparently means sky or heaven. Hark! Can you tell what hymn this is yet? Hark how all the welkin rings, glory to the King of Kings. Peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled. You got it. Five double verses, including the now forgotten fifth verse. Adam's likeness, Lord, efface, stamp thy image in its place. Second Adam from above, reinstate us in thy love. There's no official tune at this point, and Wesley says that anything solemn will do. 20 years later, George Whitefield changes some of the lyrics, including the opening line, so it becomes Hark the Herald Angels Sing. Still suitable to many tunes. The next important date in this song's history for us is 1840, the 400th anniversary of the printing press. Of course, there's a big party in Leipzig, and Felix Mendelssohn composes an ode for it. You would recognize the tune to one of the movements and be charmed by these lines. Gutenberg, du wackerer Mann, du stehst glorreich auf dem Plan. Gutenberg, O brave man, you stand full of glory on the scene. Even though Mendelssohn apparently specifically requested that his tune not be used for religious words, 15 years later, the carol as we know it was published. There are literally countless carols, since they keep being written, and many, many stories. I'm going to give you just one more, and it's a secular carol, not a hymn. I adore the 12 Days of Christmas. It's versatile. Lots of different parodies, for example, including one called The 12 Days After Christmas. Some news media even do an annual price index of what all the gifts in the song would cost each year. I was once asked to coach a theater cast in how to sing this song as part of a play. They knew the song, more or less, and of course, once you get tangled up in Lords a-leaping, you tend to lose count, get confused, and collapse. I explained to the cast of the show that they personally were better singers and memorizers than the characters they played. They needed to continue to stumble convincingly night after night as they performed their play. The 12 Days has always seemed playful and game-like to me, and it turns out it was originally published as a poem, no music, in a children's book called Mirth Without Mischief in 1780. Wikipedia has an amazing matrix showing 22 subsequent versions of the lyrics. For example, in the mid-20th century, probably in America, the true love switched from sent to me to gave to me. As a poem, it was a part of the kind of game where you say something, the next person says something else and repeats what you said, and the next person adds something and repeats, and so forth. It may be a forfeit game. You stumble, and maybe you have to give everyone something, or maybe take a drink. There are also versions where the last verse has to be recited all in one breath. There are arguments about what the partridge is doing in a pear tree. Apparently, native English gray partridges normally stay out of trees, though there is a red-legged French partridge that does perch in trees. That was first seen in England around 1770. Most people who care about this conclude that there's a pun going on, since the French word for partridge is perdri. Of course there's a conspiracy theory about the lyrics. Some people say the counting represents a secret catechism for oppressed Catholics in times and places where their religion was forbidden. This doesn't really make any sense. First, there are lots of ways of counting to 12, and maids a-milking doesn't evoke anything symbolic. Also, people have pointed out that the items counted in the supposed catechism version of the song, 10 Commandments, 11 Faithful Apostles, for example, are already part of both Catholic and Protestant teaching. By 1864, the 12 Days had a melody. Several variants, actually, but the one we know was mostly published in 1864. Some people think the song sounds French. I agree, it does remind me of a French folk song style. And some think it has a Celtic origin. Something I've just learned is that the five gold rings was added in 1909 by an English operatic baritone named Frederick Austin. You can hear plenty of The 12 Days of Christmas in our choir offering this week. We had a lot of fun putting that together, and we encourage you to listen to it several times. First, give it a chance without looking at the list of carols. Then, there are lots of layers, and your ears can sort of reach through them as you listen again. One of the things I love about Christmas carols is that we actually sing them. They're not originally concert pieces. Real people sing them in their homes and churches. I hope that in our unusual Advent and Christmas season this year, you will feel like our choir is singing with you and bringing warmth and laughter to your home.